study. So the next part of the chapter concerns what are called electric fields. And so that's what we're going to look at next. Okay, defining what an electric field is. Okay, and we can do this in the following way. Let's consider a charge or a charged object like a charged conductor. Okay, and we want to look at what happens when I place a charge in the vicinity of this. So let's say I have a charge of Q0. And I'm going to assume that Q0 is positive in charge. What's the force acting on Q0? It's what? They're like charges, so they repel. All right, now I could take this charge and I could move it over here. And what happens? Still repels. And it repels along a radial line. Like that. All right, put it over here. In fact, what I could do is I could have a bag of little, what are called test charges. Positive test charge. That I can just walk around and test the region, okay, that has some other charges in it. And I basically will map out a field because I'll get various directions. So we'll see that Q0 is pointing in that direction. Anywhere I go along, if I were to go along this line, I would actually get all along that line, Q0 would indicate that there's a force acting on it in that direction. Same thing here, right? So I could extend this line, I could go along this line, I could go along that line. And what I'm actually doing is mapping out what I'll define to be an electric field. If I put several charges in there, okay, we can get some really strange looking stuff. What happens if this charge that I put here were negative? Then would that change my picture?
The arrows would be pointing in.
All the arrows would be pointing inward. And that's the change. Now, I could write down what the force is. Let's say that this is a charge of magnitude Q. And there's my Q0. And let's say that this Q0 is some distance R away from Q, then I can actually, by Coulomb's law, write down what the force is, right? So we just go over here, it's K, the magnitude of Q times the magnitude of the test charge divided by the square of the distance between them. So that gives me the magnitude, we can see the direction of the force. Now I said this is a little test charge. A test charge is really something that's so small that when I walk around with it, it doesn't disturb the other one. All right, so it's more of a thought process. I'm not actually doing it. But we can imagine what I would do. I really only have one charge there. All right? So I could come up with something that is independent of the test charge. This test charge really doesn't exist. It's only in my head. What I could do is I could divide the magnitude of the force by the test charge. And that gives me K Q over R squared. And you notice that this expression only involves that charge and where I'm looking. So I could go over to this point over here. All I have to do is know how far I'm looking away from that charge. And that gives me some quantity. Now I don't really need a test charge in my pump. I don't have to worry about the test charge. This quantity that I've just derived is defined to be the magnitude of the electric field for that point charge. So that's the electric field for the point charge. I can little box around here so we can highlight the main result for that discussion. And now I have something new. We can add that to our list of new things we've learned this semester. And now the question is, what can we do with it? Yes?
I'm sorry, the x component over there, I thought the x component was cosine.
If the angle is in the usual location, see that's not what theta is, right?
Okay.
So if I were looking at this angle up here as theta, then your sine and cosine is going to switch because the opposites, and, right? This becomes adjacent and that becomes opposite. Okay? So sometimes you have to be careful memorizing x is always cosine of the angle because you really have to make sure you're talking about the right angle. Okay? All right, so let's see what we can do with this. Well, I guess the first thing we can do is actually just compute the electric field. Let's say that Q is 5.0 microcoulombs. Same picture, so since it's positive. And I could ask, what is the electric field? Find the electric field at a position which is 3.0 centimeters away from the charge. Okay, so this is just a straightforward computation. So the electric field is K Q over R squared. We can plug in 9 times 10 to the 9th. Now let me be a little careful right now and put the units in. So as we know, the units are newton meters squared per coulomb squared. Then we put in the charge. 5.0 times 10 to the minus 6 coulombs. And then I have R squared. 3 centimeters is how many meters? 3 times 10 to the minus 2 meters, quantity squared. Okay, well, I picked 3. It was nice because when I squared, I get 9, right? 9 into 9 is 1, so I can do this in my head. And we're left with 5.0 times 10 to the what?
7s, do we agree?
So it's 5 times 10 to the 7. And what are the units? So let's cancel a few things. There's a coulomb, there's one of those. If this is meters squared, so that kills meters squared, so I'm left with newtons. So we see that in SI units, electric field have units of newtons per coulomb. Well, that makes sense because we put force divided by charge, right? That's newton divided by coulomb, so everything's consistent. Now, when you're turning your homework in with answers, okay, not only suggest that you indicate the final answers, okay, use the right significant digits. All right, powers of 10. And don't forget your units. Units are important. Okay, so that one's nice and straightforward. Okay. Let's consider another problem.
little more complicated. All right. Let's imagine, okay, that I have a proton and it's moving along and it encounters an electric field. Okay? So a proton moves in a uniform electric field. What does a uniform electric field mean to you? What does uniform anything mean?
It's all the same.
What?
It's like all the same. They're the same throughout.
The same throughout. Constant. All right, so I've got a constant, not only constant in magnitude, but constant in direction. Okay, so we have a proton moves in a uniform electric field whose magnitude is given by 3.0 times 10 to the third newtons per coulomb. And so this is the idea. The electric field, if I were to draw field lines for this particular case, could look like this. It could be just parallel lines instead of what we have here. Here, this is not uniform because the spacing between these gets wider as it goes out. Okay, if I were actually to compute the electric field along here, it depends on R, doesn't it? So as I get further and further away from the charge, the electric field gets less and less. Okay, so that's not uniform. It changes with distance. So I'd like to dream up this, and at some point in this chapter we'll give you an idea as to how I can produce such an electric field. Okay, and then I have a proton. And what I'd like to do is have this proton enter this electric field. And I want to say what something about the effect of the electric field on it. Okay? If the proton is initially moving at, say, 2.5 times 10 to the fourth meters per second, then how fast is it moving? So there's almost a word problem. A few more words than the other problem. Right. So I've got this proton. It's moving in the field. Okay. And so the first thing we want to know is, why would I even wonder about how fast it's moving later? Okay. And the idea is that if I put a charge in an electric field, turns out that it will feel force. Okay, and that's the key. And I can get that by thinking about that proton being my test charge. So it's like doing this in reverse. I know what the electric field is. There's my proton. It will experience this force. And so the proton will feel a force whose magnitude is given by the magnitude of the charge times the electric field. What's the charge of a proton?
Mm-hmm.
right, my soul. E. Little e. Okay? So, this we know. And of course, we know little e is 1.67 times 10 to the minus. Is it? Yes. 1.60 times 10 to the minus 19 coulombs. So, where are we? All right, we know that. So that's what the picture is. I've got a proton, enters an electric field, and it's going to feel a force. So I bring this proton in here. Which direction is the force going to act on the proton? What's your suspicion? It's going to act in the same direction as the field. So if I put a positive charge in an electric field, that charge is going to want to follow those lines. Okay? But if I put a negative charge in there, if I were to change this to an electron instead of a proton, then it would be opposite to that. Because my test charge, right? The electric field I designed using positive test charges. Okay. All right, so that's pretty much the problem. I know what the force is that's acting on that. That's Q times E. I know that Q in this particular case is little e. I know that the electric field here is 3 times 10 to the third newton per coulomb. And if I were to ask, tell you to just find the force acting on the charge, we'd be done. I mean, once we plug those numbers in, right? But I didn't ask you that, did I? I said, what if the proton starts here at 2.5 times 10 to the fourth, and 5 millimeters down the road, it will have a different velocity. Why? Yeah, there's a force acting, and that force acting on it, so it's going to accelerate. Right? Since the force is acting in that direction, it's like somebody's pushing or pulling it. So of course it's going to speed up. Okay? So that means what? We have to go back to
charge.
Chapter 1? That's right. It's not staying up today.
Just put it through the loop and where it's hanging from.
Huh?
Just put it through that little handhole.
What? I could do that, but then Dr. Olchevsky might not reach it. Okay. All right, where am I? Okay, so the idea here is that I want to know, okay, how fast it's moving afterwards. So this is the typical problem, right? It's got initial velocity here. And when it gets some distance x down the road, right, it's got a final velocity, and it's accelerating. It's a constant acceleration because the charge is constant, the uniform field, that's a constant E. So this is a constant acceleration problem, right, just like we looked at in chapter 2. So how do I relate this? So my variables are V0, V, because I want to know what V is, X, and the acceleration, which I can get by computing the force divided by the mass. So and the force is just little e times big E. So I know what the acceleration is. So there's the acceleration. I know how far it's gone. I know the initial velocity. If I have an equation that relates these four quantities, I can solve for V. Is there an equation that relates these four?
Kinematic.
Kinematic equation, yeah. But what is it? Does that look familiar? Okay. So now it's just a matter of plugging in numbers. Okay? Then at this stage, I'll just assume that you can plug the numbers in. Right? And solve for V. The important part is to think about this and what's happening. Right? I have a charge, moving in an electric field. Therefore, it will experience a force. If it experiences a force, it will accelerate, because the acceleration is the force divided by the mass from F equals ma. So now I know the acceleration, right? I've got four variables here, one of which I don't know, one of which, or three of which I do know. I can go ahead and solve using kinematic equations. So here's where some of physics fun starts to creep back into the course. I might throw little things like this to make you remember. Okay. All right, what other things can we do with these fields?
Is it just kind of a standard to draw the electric field coming from the positive, or is it always that way?
Well, you draw the electric field in the direction that if you feel the force of your test charge.
Okay.
Right? So, and we'll see in a few minutes a few more electric field examples, because I only really did one. Okay, but the idea here is you're putting a positive test charge. The electric field lines are drawn in the direction that the force would be acting on that positive charge. Okay? If I put a positive charge here, it pushes out. If this were a negative charge and I put a positive charge, it would come inward.
But theirs would still be coming from the positive charge.
Well, I changed it to a negative.
Rather than like the positive charge is still the one.
You mean the test charge?
The test charge.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, the test charge is always positive.
Okay.
So I just carry a little bag of positive charges to test, you know, so I get a sense of what direction the electric field is pointing by looking to see the direction of the force. Because if I look at this equation in terms of directions, all I have to do is put arrows on these, and this is telling me that the force is in the direction of the electric field if I put positive charge for the test charge. Okay. All right. But we really do need to start thinking about what happens when I have more than one charge, what might the electric field look like, because I can ask questions. I can give you a couple charges, point to a position, and ask you, instead of the magnitude of the electric field, I could just ask you a simple question. What direction is the electric field pointing? That could be a test question. Okay? And that would go to pretty much what he was asking, trying to determine which way the electric field goes. So let's look at an example in which we have more than one. Well, we have more than one charge. Let's say I have two charges. And for now, stick with two positive charges. Let's make this one a 10 microcoulomb charge. Make that one a 5 microcoulomb charge. And the idea is I could sit at some location anywhere around here. Okay. If I put a test charge here, it will not only feel being pushed away by 10 microcoulomb charge, but it would also feel it was being pushed away by the 5 microcoulomb charge. So as forces, you would know there's a net force. But if I divide out the test charge, I can talk about electric fields instead of forces. So you can add electric fields just like you add forces. Okay. In this particular example, let me make it simple and think about the force, the electric field, acting at that point. Okay? Ignore the 5 microcoulomb charge. What's the electric field at this point due to the other charge? Which way is it pointing? Okay, so it's going to point that direction. And I could actually take this expression and compute the magnitude of that field. And what about 5 microcoulomb charge? So maybe I could call this G
charge one, and we'll call that F1. And I could call that charge two, and then the other one would be F2. And I'm only doing this so when you look back at your notes, you can kind of remember where each of those came from. Now, it's entirely possible, since those are in opposite directions, right, the net force is going to be less than either of these, possibly. In fact, if I move this point around enough, I might be able to find a location where those forces cancel. Okay. In fact, let's find out where that is. So that's what the problem is here. Find the location of the line connecting the charges at which the net field vanishes. So, where is that point? Okay, where there is no total field. But the idea is, if I get too close to the 5, right, that's going to be a pretty strong force compared to over here, but if I come over and get close to the 10, I could get close enough that this one is going to be stronger than that. So somewhere in the middle, they're going to have equal magnitude. Okay? So how do I set this up? Oh, actually, I should have put it in. All right, so what I need to do is give a position. So let's say that this is x. Of course, I need one more piece of information to actually get a number out, don't I? What else do you think I should be in the problem?
The distance between them.
The distance between them. Right. So I need a distance. But it's something simple. Let's say that these are separated by 1 centimeter. Nice simple number. Okay, so let me take a look at the electric field that's pointing out here. So I'll call that E1. E1 is the electric field at this point due to the 10. So that's going to be K Q1 over, in this case, x squared. And then E2 is the electric field that's at that point due to the second charge. So it's going to be K second charge over this distance. What is that distance?
1 minus 1.
Okay. It's, well, it's, maybe I should have made it 1 meter, but it's not quite 1 meter. Because I have to have it in the right units. If I put x in units of meters, okay, then I could do 0.01. Or, if I'm careful, and I could do 1 minus x, I could keep this x in centimeters as long as I'm not trying to compute the exact electric field. Because once I set these equal to each other, okay, then all the other units will cancel, and this should have the same units as that. That's all I'm required. So I don't have to convert at this point to meters. Okay? Because I'm not computing the electric field and making sure I have a problem to worry about. So now, in order for me to have the right x, right, if x is close to 0, that's going to be big, and this is going to be 1, roughly. Right? And so if I get really close, I can make that, since x is as small as I want, I can make that as big as I want, right? That's what I was saying back here. If I get close to the charge, that electric field is going to be as strong.
stronger and stronger due to this guy, and we won't feel this one electric.
Okay, so the point is, I want to know what x is just the right x, that this number is equal to that number.
I would just set them equal, right?
So E1 equals E2 implies, so let me set these two equal, K Q1 over x squared equals KQ2 over 1 minus x squared. The K's go out. And I just have to solve that for x. Looks kind of ugly, right? So let's see. Let me use the eraser method here. Now we can see that a little clearer. Well, I don't like x's in the denominator. In fact, we probably don't like fractions. So let's bring the 1 minus x squared to the left and the x squared to the right. I get 1 minus x squared is equal to x squared Q2, of course Q1. Now I can solve that. Any ideas how to solve something like this? If I just take the square root. Okay, but if I take the square root, I get 1 minus x square root of Q1 is equal to the square root of that is x square root of Q2. Now I can do this because Q1 and Q2 are the magnitudes, they're positive. I'm assuming that x, the point is in between these two. Okay, so that x is between 0 and 1, so 1 minus x is positive. So I'm not really doing anything funny here. And then what I can do is just basically solve this equation for x. Multiply this out, that's the square root of Q1 minus x square root of Q1 equals x square root of Q2. Bring over. Put all the x terms on the same side. And the square root of Q1 is equal to square root of Q1 plus square root of Q2 times x. Now I can solve for x. By dividing, I get the square root of Q1 over the square root of Q1 plus the square root of Q2. Since the numerator is smaller than the denominator, this number, of course, is going to be between 0 and 1, right? Like it should be. So all I have to do is plug in my charges that I have here, and I know exactly what that x is. Could have done this problem so that x was in meters, then I would have had to put this as 0.01, but then that would just follow all along here. This would have been, right, 0.01 times this. So when I get up here, it would have ended up being this whole thing multiplied by 0.01, which is kind of consistent with it. But, yeah. So I really didn't violate anything by keeping it. All right, let's do another example. Let's take a positive charge and a negative charge. And let me do this
symmetric. I'm going to make these have the same magnitude. So let's say this is 2.0 microcoulombs, and that's minus 2.0 microcoulombs. So here I have two charges, same magnitude, opposite in sign. Now, whenever you have two charges like that, that are close together, this is what's known as a dipole.
Di, meaning two.
Okay, so I have a dipole, and people are often interested in dipoles in terms of charges, and looking at how far you are from that dipole. Dipoles are often used for, right, if these are oscillating, they'll create electromagnetic waves, which typically, if they're oscillating at the right frequency, would give you radio waves, and you can broadcast signals by using whatever. Okay. So there's various things. Dipoles are also useful in studying various chemical behaviors in atoms, because you have charges that are close together. You look at dipole moments and things like that. Instrumentation over in the chemistry department is often used to look at those behaviors. But for us right now, we just have a positive and negative charge. I want to know something about what the electric field is. Okay, now earlier we talked about mapping out electric fields. Okay, so let's think about what an electric field lines might look like for a dipole. Okay. So let's see, if I'm sitting right here, which way is the electric field pointing? Just what you thought.
To the right.
Put a positive test charge. It's going to push it away. What's that going to do to it?
Pull it.
So overall, it's going to be pointing this way. What if I put it here?
Same thing.
In fact, any along this whole line, the electric field is pointing this way. So any place that I go along here, the electric field is along that line. I don't know what the magnitude is, so I compute it. Right. But right now we're just getting a qualitative field. What if I'm sitting on the other side? Okay. Pushing away. The positive charge is pushing on it. The negative charge is doing what? Except this positive charge is closer. So it's going to have more of an effect. So if I put this negative charge way out here, and I've got my electric field here is just going to be diminished by putting this here by a little. So what about on this side? Positive charge is going to be coming in that direction. Okay, what about some other direction? Well, let's see if I were sitting here. Be pushed up. So actually, if I look real close here, close enough that this guy doesn't really matter, I guess get the picture I have over there. So this starts off with little radial lines, except as I get, get to some point, say here, this is going to have more of an effect. Okay. Likewise, I could look at the field lines close to the negative charge. Which way are they pointing?
Inward.
All right, so I'm going to be going something like this if I'm close enough. And let's say I'm halfway between the two of these along this line, and I look at a point right there. And now the question is, which way is the electric field pointing for that? So, well, now I've got to be a little more careful. Okay. I sit here, and the positive charge would push a test charge along this line, right? So
if I put a test charge in there, it would feel a force going in that direction. So that's the direction of the electric field. What would it feel from the negative charge? It's pulling. It's pulling along that line. Okay. Now for this particular configuration, these charges have the same magnitude. So if I were to compute the total on here, let's see what the magnitude of the electric field is. For this guy, it's going to be charge divided by the square of the distance, sine of a constant. Now I could arrange things so that these are separated by some distance. Let's say this is 8 centimeters. And let's say that I'm looking 3 centimeters up the vertical. Then what is the distance that my observation point is from the positive charge? Okay, so this is 4.
That's 4.
That's 3. This is a 3, 4, 5 triangle, right? So this is 5 centimeters. So that point is 5 centimeters away. How far is the other charge?
5
centimeters. So if I were to compute the magnitude of the electric field for each of these, I would get K times 2 times 10 to the minus 6 divided by 5 times the 10 to the minus 2 squared. In each case, I get the same number for the magnitude. What does that tell me? These two arrows have the same length. Okay. So what happens when I add these? How do you add? Do you have a little parallelogram? Right? So, or I can take this and I can slide this up. So that plus this is going to be, there's my total electric field. How would you describe that? In words to somebody that you call your parents or yourself and say, I had a great class today in physics. The electric field was parallel to what? Ground? Horizontal? Right, something like that, right? So yeah, this is parallel actually to the axis, right? Or to the line between them. Okay? So there. So I can tell you, right here, these things are going this way. Over here, they're coming in, but all of a sudden in the middle, they're going that direction. And now I could do the same kind of thing over here, but it gets a little more complicated. But this is a nice symmetric problem, so when you have symmetries like that, it makes life easy. So, what would the diagram? So I could actually compute the total field. Let me write down the magnitude. The magnitude of this electric field, since I've got some numbers here, might as well plug some in, is going to be KQ1, call that Q1, divided by R squared, plus, since, right, that. Well, let's call that E1. And let's say E2 is the magnitude, KQ2 over R squared. Both of these R's are 5 centimeters. So those E1 and E2 are nothing other than the lengths of those vectors. But those are vectors. How do I add vectors? Well, I geometrically added them this way. But if I were to actually have to use numbers, what do I have to do to add these two vectors, two electric field vectors? Okay, if these were forces, what way would you do?
Break-minute components.
Break-minute components. Right? So the same thing with electric field vectors. You have to break these into components. Okay, so let's see. Let me call the top one E1 and the bottom one E2. Now the picture is really getting busy. The total field must be E1 plus E2 means I need the x component of each. And so let's see, what is the x component of E1? Well, I need to draw a little triangle. The x component is the shadow of that vector on the horizontal. So we have this. How do I get that?
Cosine.
Cosine of what? I need an angle. Well, let's call that theta. Now it's in the same position as standard position that we saw before. So we take E1x is going to be E1 cosine theta. What about E2? Well, you do the same thing. Of course, it's the same thing. It's the same value. Since E1 and E2, the Q's are the same, the R's are the same, these are the same number. They're the same magnitude. So what I could do is put a 2, because they have the same x component, which means I don't have to compute too many. All right, so let's see. That's going to be 2. The magnitude of the charge over r squared, the cosine of theta. How do I get the cosine of this angle? Well, that angle, I claim, is the same as this angle. If I were a little cleaner with my diagram, right, this, we've already noted, is parallel. So there's two parallel lines with a transversal, so these, okay, two angles are the same. But what do we know about that triangle? Well, like I said, that's pretty busy. So let me, I'm going to redraw that triangle. The base of this triangle is 4 centimeters. The height of the triangle is 3 centimeters. And we had that the hypotenuse was 5 centimeters. And there's theta. So I redrew the triangle because there's too much stuff on it. From that triangle, do you know what the cosine of the angle is? And what?
Said use the inverse. I don't know.
Okay, well, I just want the cosine. I don't want the angle. So the cosine is what? The adjacent of the hypotenuse. So that's 4 over 5. So let me plug some numbers in. 2 Q1, 2 times 10 to the minus 6 divided by R, which is 5 times 10 to the minus 2 squared. I could put a K in there. How's that?
Yeah, I do.
Like I said, you gotta keep your eyes open here. Okay, thanks. All right, so then we just go through and plug away. So we have 2 times 2 is 16 times 9 divided by 125, whatever that is. Divided by 10 to the negative 4th, I guess 10 to the 7th, is that right? And this is it. So whatever this number turns out to be. Okay, what about the y components? What's the the Y component of the electric field.
Two E1 sine theta.
Hmm?
Two E1 sine theta.
All right, I get two E1 sine theta. Anybody agree with that? Got a lot of people agreeing with that. Anybody disagree with that? Okay, I do. If I gave you a vector that looked like the pink vector here and I asked you what the Y component is, what would you tell me?
Zero.
Why? Because the Y component for E1 is pointing upwards and the Y component for E2 is pointing downwards. Yes, they have equal magnitudes. Right? Now you can throw the sign in, but you don't get a 2, you get a 0 times it because they, yeah. Okay? That's what's nice about this symmetry problem and why this comes up so often, because you can get one of the components that vanishes. Sometimes people take the two charges and orient them that way, in which case then it's the X component that vanishes at that particular point. Now, what do the field lines look like for a dipole? What we've already seen is that field lines go from positive to negative. Right? So the lines always leave positive, they enter negative. But what we get in the middle is something that looks like this. And when they leave or come into the charge, it comes in radial, right? So it's perpendicular there. So you have charge. Right, you can put a couple of arrows on here to indicate which way they're going. And then we have, of course, on the opposite side, we have things like this. And they're coming in. And the negative. So that's what the field line looks like for a dipole. Now what you want to do is challenge yourself to think about what do the field lines look like for two positive and two negative charges. So I'll let you think about those. All right, there's one other type of configuration that comes up, okay, in this chapter. And that's when I have two parallel plates. One is positively charged, one is negatively charged. Okay, this is what's called a parallel plate capacitor. So I could think about a thin plate that I charge positively. Often we'll draw it like this, but what we really mean is that this is like a sheet. And right now, we'll just consider that this is a plane. All right, so this could be a conductor. All right, that's in the shape of a plane. It has a particular area. And the total charge on here is called plus Q. And then I put another plate next to it. And I don't have a total charge of minus Q. And then the question is, what does the electric field look like in between these? So if I take and put a little test charge in there, okay, which way do you think the electric field points?
From the positive to the negative.
From the positive to the negative.
Perpendicular.
Alright. In fact, any place I am in here, as long as I stay far from the edges, the electric field lines will.
once I get to the edges, you may get some little changes to that. So typically, what you want to do is stay far enough away from the edges so it looks fairly uniform. This is how I create a uniform electric field. So that's what the electric field looks like. And one can actually write down the magnitude of this electric field in terms of what's known as the charge density. So here's a nice Greek letter for you, sigma. Okay. You've probably seen a big sigma. That's a capital sigma. That's used for some. But little sigma. Okay, that's defined as the charge per area. Right, that's a density. It's a surface density. E, the electric field, has a value related to the charge per area, divided by epsilon zero, which is the permittivity of free space that we saw the other day. That's buried in the K. So that's what the electric field can be computed as for parallel plates. Okay.
And for the most part, that's really all we need to know about parallel plates other than using them.
So for example, there's a homework problem. Now that one I didn't write down. Well, there's two homework problems. Example I just erased that I talked about earlier. Instead of putting a little extra charge over here, I could have a charge hanging on a light thread in this plate. Now it feels this electric field, which I could get by from here. And so therefore, there's a force acting on it, which is the charge on that little dangling mass times E. I could just put QE, where I compute my E this way, and go through that whole tension argument that I went through before. All right, that's what you do for that homework problem. There's another more interesting problem, and this kind of problem we've seen in places. If I put a bunch of, put a plate here that's negatively charged, and I put down here another plate that's positively charged, and now I shoot a charge in here. So let's say I have a beam of charges and I follow one of the charges that comes in. It comes in with some initial velocity. Could be a proton. Okay, so let's assume this is a proton. Okay, what's going to happen when this charge enters that electric field?
It's going to get shot towards the negative.
It's going to feel a force. Okay, so if I'm in here, basically, what? Okay, the first thing is when we draw these, if you're really thinking, you might say, well, there's gravity. But let's not think of these things being lined that way. Maybe we could have them lined this way with my two plates and shoot through. So we'll ignore gravity. Right? There's no gravity here. So the question is, what force is acting on here? Well, I put a positive charge in here. What's the positive plate do?
Okay, that pushes it up.
Negative plate pulls it. That's the direction the E field's going in, right? So it's going to follow the electric, try to follow the electric field line. So it has a force, which is Q times the electric field. So as this is coming along, it's not going to continue along horizontal path, is it? Because there's an upward force acting on it. So it's going to trace out a path. This is very much like projectile motion. You know the standard problem where you have a car that's going horizontally off a cliff? Right? So the you have an initial horizontal velocity and then it goes down because of constant acceleration due to gravity. In this case, there's a constant acceleration due to this uniform field, very much like this problem, except you have to go back and remember chapter 3, projectile motion.
In this case, you have to write down that x is v0 times the time, where x is the x position starting from here going forward. And right, there's no acceleration horizontally, just like projectile motion. Vertically, y is going to be, in this direction, is going to be the initial y component, which in that case is 0 times t, so that's not there. All right, minus, well, plus 1 half at squared. In free fall, that's just minus 1 half gt squared, right? But in this case, that a is now replaced with f divided by m. So if I were to put this in here, just like I did the other type of problem, right? Thinking about the acceleration, okay, in terms of the electric force, then I have all that I need to solve a problem that says, oh, this is going to go so far here, you're given this distance, how far upward does it go? And does it collide into the plate, or does it escape before it hits the plate? Right? If your electric field is weak enough, this will just go aloft here and then take off. But if it's a strong field, it could just go roop. Right? That's what that problem is asking. So that's essentially the setup for that homework problem. Okay. Yes.